Really, we're talking about faith's evolution in our series about becoming wise. Krista Tippett, the author of our book, she talks about the raw materials of wisdom. And this week's is faith. And she talks all about the evolution of faith over time, both collectively and on our individual journeys. So isn't that, for so many of us, what our experience has been? Maybe we started out in traditions, which we may still very much be a part of and love those traditions and rituals, and yet we recognize it doesn't belong, the holiness, the faith, it's not get contained in the walls of the church, but it's everywhere present. Everywhere, in everything, in all the glory of life and all the people in life, even the ones who push our buttons, even the places of challenge, right? Yes, Don. Even there. Anybody know what God is spelled backwards? I know, I guess you could all figure that one out pretty easily. You probably heard that little twist before. So years ago when Brenly and I arrived here, actually, we had a dog named Chaos who was a healer. And he was true both to his name, Chaos, and his breed, Healer, because he truly was a healer for me in the sense that he was a teacher for me. Chaos was everything his name implies. He was unpredictable. He was true to his breed, too, in terms of healers tend to rush up to things and people. And so he would charge, and you never knew, are they going to get a kiss or a bite? Nobody knows. So he put me on edge a little bit, I have to say. He stretched me in all kinds of ways. You know, he would pee on anything new that came into the house. He bust through any boundary I tried to set. And yet he was cuddly, and he was cute, and he was strong, and he could hike forever and ever, and he loved to get up on high places and look over at the majestic view. There was something about Chaos, right? As you probably have your pets, that there's something about them, whether you already have a multidimensional being at home, which is the cat, or you have a good and faithful servant, which is, well, sort of servant, right? Depending upon the dog. So I would go through a range of emotions around Chaos. You know, sometimes it was warm and comforting and love, and sometimes it was irritation and annoyance. And it's kind of, you know, like that on the spiritual journey, isn't it? The journey of faith is a lot like these kinds of feelings and experiences. It can be unpredictable. And yet there is a sense of building resilience through it. We could be rebellious on our faith journey when we're guided to do something at times. We could be deeply comforted at times. It can feel the love and the commitment, the dedication to that journey and that connection with Spirit. So the evolution of faith is very much like this. It definitely grows our hearts as Chaos grew mine. It can grow our patience as Chaos grew mine. So many things that we get from our faith. So this week I was out walking and listening to the chapter on faith, and it took many miles of walking, and Krista Tippett took us through many miles of faith's evolution, as she tends to do, both her own personal insights and experiences and interviews with poets and scientists and spiritual leaders and all walks of life. And so I was feeling very full. And I rounded this corner where I had broken my arm 4 years ago when I was walking alone with Chaos on our last big walk together. And so I had to just pause in that space, feeling so spiritually and intellectually and heart-filled by what I was listening to and the experience of being there and then coming into contact with that spot. So I just had to throw a stick for my faithful teacher in honor of him there. You know, we use that word faith to mean so many things. We often use it to mean belief. You know, what do we believe? And we also use it to talk about traditions, the various religious traditions of the world. We sometimes use it as a feeling, a sense of knowing in our hearts that we just know this thing is possible, whatever it is. We affirm it. We envision it. We hold it in a place of faith. Faith is an action, too. Faith is a way that we show up in service or in relationship. It's a way that we allow ourselves to see the divine in all of humanity, to bring forth the best in each other and in ourselves. Faith can do so many things. It's dynamic. The first time I wrote a message on faith, I just sat there staring at a blank page for the longest time. I had no idea what to say. Because faith was woven into the fabric of my being, I didn't know how to talk about it. When something is so much a part of us, how do you extract it out, and look at it so that you can even say anything about it, you know? And I think that's true a lot of times for our spiritual journey, yet we plow through anyway and find the word somehow because there is an innate impulse inside of us to share and to learn and to be in inquiry together about this magnificent, infinite space beyond time and form that is there at the base of our lives, that is deep inside of us, that we can see when we look at the starry skies and the depth of all those stars. If you've ever really gazed at a full-on starry sky, which I bet most of us have, to watch the interplay of light and to see the depths of the Milky Way is just phenomenal. Awe-inspiring, wonder-making stuff. To gaze at the horizon of the ocean or into a lover's eyes or into our own sparks that sense of wonder that is about being on a journey of faith. So words may seem inadequate to the grandeur of it all, but still we forge on, right? We grow in sharing our experiences, in making testimonies to our faith and our experiences and our awakening and our touching of that holy place, the miracles that abound everywhere present. It's a way, too, when we express it or share it, or maybe we choose to hold it close for a while, whatever it is, of allowing somebody into that intimate place within us that also then touches the intimate place within them that says, ah, yeah, I have touched something like that before too. I have seen or experienced beyond form and time, beyond the mundane world I have experienced. And then our work really is to pull it forth, right? To experience it, to bring it out into the world, to be the faith in action so that that can be a part of our everyday experience. The wow and the wonder and the awe that faith can bring forth for us. Faith has also, of course, evolved collectively through society and through cultures and through humanity all over the world for thousands and thousands of years. So there's many ways to look at that. Krista Tippett looks at a lot of what's, you know, how it all happens in the world and then how it interplays with us individually. And one of the things that she points out that I think is on the minds and hearts of a lot of us when we look out into the faith-based world is we see a rise of fundamentalism, or so it seems. And that concerns a lot of it. Anybody get concerned about that at all when you kind of take note of that or think that's what's happening? So it's actually, though, a harbinger of better news. There's a religious scholar, Reza Aslan, who says this: fundamentalism is a reactionary phenomenon, not an independent one. So when I see fundamentalism surge, I know that what's really happening is that the natural progress of society is surging, and that fundamentalism is reacting to that. I choose to focus on the progress, not the reaction. Brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. So when we find ourselves in those places of concern about extremism, fundamentalism, whatever it is in the society that you get concerned about, remember to choose to focus on the progress, not the reaction. Because that is what's happening all over the world. As we evolve our faith, we spiritually awaken. That's just another way of saying that the awakening is happening, right? We can feel it, and so can the people who are filled with fear about the change that might come, who will then step back and cling to the fundamentals and make it a religion itself, a fundamentalism. Make a reactionary thing its own, seem like its own religion, its own phenomenon, its own sect. But in truth, it's just reactionary stuff. So let's choose to focus where we need to focus. So science and spirituality intertwined is another one of these themes for the collective evolution that's happening with faith. And it's been happening, of course, for a long time. We just hear about it more and more, right? Quantum physics and spirituality and, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity really was a big part of this interplay. And even, you know, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, our co-founders, talked a lot. They had a lot of respect for science. They did not see science and spirituality as two different hands, but things that intertwine together. In fact, Charles Fillmore would talk about how faith sort of leads the way in the sense that casts a vision for what is possible. And then science comes along and it discerns and it measures and it proves that what faith said was possible, that everybody else might have thought was impossible, is now possible. And now there's a new frontier. So we are the makers, as people who are walking a journey of faith, we are the makers of that vision, of that co-creative casting forward of what is possible. Especially in the teachings that we hold in New Thought, because we hold that kind of affirmative space and co-creative space of what we are becoming. It's always important to be grounded in the beingness, and then so much of our work is also in the becomingness, into the stepping forward and broadening and deepening into all that we have come here to be, all that we have been asked to evolve into, even beyond the frontiers of our own imagination. And it happens over and over and over again throughout humanity and history, that we break through the barriers that we once thought were not possible. You can think of so many probably examples of that. One of them I just watched on Netflix about Diana Nyad, the swimmer. She swam from Cuba to Key West. It took her 5 tries, but everybody said it's not possible. She did it at 28. People were a little bit more, okay, well, you could try it. And then she didn't try it again until she was 60. And at the age of 60, she started telling people, her best friend, and then more of a team that got together, that she was going to do this. And they said, oh, you know, all the medical experts say no way. All the navigation experts about currents and weather patterns and all say no way. All the sea creature scientists say no way. The jellyfish, the sharks, the whatever, you know, no. But there was something in her that knew it was possible and that she must try. Remember last week we watched that video on Brené Brown. She said half-hearted versus whole-hearted, right? And to be a wholehearted lover of life, right, is somebody who says, I'm going to give it my all, and I have the spark of faith inside of me that thinks it's possible. Otherwise, I wouldn't try. There's some part of me that thinks it's possible. So Diana tried it 4 more times from the age of 60 to 64. And at the age of 64, she made the passage. What scientists said was not possible, what others said was not possible, now has become possible. So what's the next frontier for the swimmer or the teacher or the scientist or the spiritual whatever person on the earth, right? It doesn't really matter what it is that we're up to in the world. All of this applies. there's always a frontier of possibility and becomingness that we're pushing into, because it's natural for life to evolve. It's how it started from the very beginning. We think there was some kind of movement of divine intelligence. We don't know exactly what came before the divine intelligence, but something came together, right? Some kind of light issued forth, and then the evolution of life began, and here we stand. Magnificent human bodies and minds and hearts that long for the next thing, the next frontier, the next possibility. It's that we must remember when we see what feels like what the Baptists called backsliding. That, oh no, this is all part of the progress. This is part of the process. This is part of the evolution of humanity. And I get to be a part of it, because as I say yes to my faith journey, to my own evolution, to the reason for my being here, for the natural impulse to become all that I have come here to be, to unveil the truth of who I am, my soul, my innate divinity. When we say yes to that, when we wake up in the morning and say yes to that, in whatever ways it shows up in our life, we just say, yes, God, bring it to me in whatever ways, gently, please, is what I like to add. Always add a little gentleness. And then off we go. Alive and engaged in our purpose, alive and engaged in a sense of forward momentum, the natural forward momentum and evolution of divinity upon the earth. It's powerful stuff that we signed up to be a part of, and faith's evolution helps us point the way. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks writes in To Heal a Fractured World, faith does not mean certainty. It means a courage to live with uncertainty. It does not mean having the answers. It means having the courage to ask the questions. And then I would add to live the questions. So often we get this confused, right? Faith does have a sense of knowing, a sense of conviction in us, as it says in Hebrews, of things not yet seen. And yet, it's not a certainty. Because with certainty, we lose mystery. And what would the joy of spirit be without mystery? That I don't know that I don't know, and I know that I don't know, but I'm okay with the I don't know, and I'm intrigued and curious about the I don't know. And so, like a scientist, I go discerning my path and I learn a little more. But there's always something more that I don't know, and we are okay with the I don't know, because it is juicy. It's good stuff, right? I loved that meditation song so much. I hope we get that. This is the first time I heard it. But that into the infinite, beyond space and form. It is what happens for us when we touch our faith, right? When we are in touch with this faith journey. And yet, then we're very much here. We're very much embodied. We're very much moving about the world and having conversation and serving and doing. And yet, all the while, there is this sort of grounding feeling inside of us that says, oh my gosh, if I open this up, if I open this portal of my heart up, it'll be like a starry vast sky, because I am one with the infinite impulse of the universe that is moving and breathing and having its being through me and evolving me. Right now, as we sit here, we are evolving. Right now. Powerful, isn't it, to think moment by moment? There is no time, but we just use it because we don't know what else to say about it. It's ever present, right? It's one moment, not really stacked upon another, but we can't really wrap our heads around it, so we just go, okay, this moment, this moment, this moment, this now, this now, this now. All of it available to us. Jesus was so demonstrative of how relationship is key to the evolution of our faith. You know, he was, if you think about, you know, what he seemed to come in knowing, I mean, at 12 years old, he was in the temples asking questions, right? Not taking the certainty, asking the questions, pushing the agenda, helping evolve the conversation from the beginning. But he loved, it seemed, to be in the company of others who could be he could be in inquiry with. And he didn't know boundaries. He wasn't like, I'm just going to hang out with people like me. In fact, he was quite deliberate about bringing in all swaths of humanity to be his followers, because he understood the richness of our diversity is what helps us evolve forward, not just the safety of our tribe. And so 2,000 years ago, he was showing us how to cross those boundaries, those social norms, so that we could learn from each other and evolve together. One of the most striking stories of this is when the disciples go to get something to eat, and Jesus is alone, and he walks through Samaria and goes to Jacob's well and hangs out there for a minute. Well, for a while, I guess. And now this is striking because Jews and Samaritans did not mix with each other. Jews were not to associate with Samaritans. And a man and a woman were not to have a public conversation alone, certainly a man and a woman who didn't know each other. And yet that's exactly what happens with the Samaritan woman at the well of Jacob. Jesus and the woman are there together alone. The story makes a very distinct comment that it is noon. Why? Because they want us to know it's broad daylight. And there he is, all that gall to be there, a Jewish man with a Samaritan woman in the broad light of day. And so he says, would you give me a drink? And she says, oh, sir, you, a Jew, are asking me, a Samaritan, for a drink? I mean, he's already crossed a huge boundary, right? And then they go into a theological discussion. So this person who would, by all social mores, be lower than Jesus because she's a woman, because she's a Samaritan, he treats as his intellectual and spiritual equal. And they have a theological conversation about the different ways that their traditions worship. The Samaritans on the mountaintop, the Jews in the temple. And Jesus says, you know, it doesn't really matter where we worship. He says, there will come a day when we will all worship in spirit and truth. Isn't that beautiful? Still today, don't we hold that? There will come a day when we will all worship in spirit and truth. It doesn't mean we give up our diversity. We don't give up the richness of our traditions. That's not what it's saying. It's saying have your rich tradition and your rituals and your scriptures and your, you know, whatever it is that feeds you. Understand that. Go to the depths of that. But also recognize that where we're headed, where we're evolving to, is a place where we all come together in spirit and truth. And that's really happening all the time. It's just that we have to look for it and call it forth. So then in this conversation, Jesus says, well, look, if you would have asked me to give you a drink of water, I would have given you living water, and you would never thirst again. She's probably thinking, who is this guy? Are you kidding me? She says, sir, you don't have anything to get water out of the well, and the well is deep. And he says, go get your husband. And she says, I don't have a husband. He said, that's right. You've had four. And now the guy you're with isn't your husband. And suddenly she knows he can see spiritually that he has that developed seer. And she's interested now a little bit more in where that living water is. Where is the living water that you speak of? Where is the living water that we all are thirsting for? It's at the well. It's at the well of prayer, the well of meditation, the well of source, the well of inquiry, the well of conversation, the well that helps us evolve our faith. And we have to go to the well over and over again deliberately. We bring in that wide swath of people into our lives. We put ourselves out there in the world to embody the evolution of our faith. To serve each other, to relate to each other, to be in the question together, to live the question, not just ask it, but to live and to lean into that question, to be the question together. Elizabeth Alexander, that poet, I'm still living with her question. Are we not of interest to each other? are we not of interest to each other? I feel like I'm holding that question as I move about my day. Are we not of interest to each other? It reminds me to take interest because the divine being is sitting right across from me or walking down the street or checking out at the grocery store, or driving alongside of me, or my neighbor who called yesterday and said, what is going on at Unity? It is so loud. There was a big quinceanera here. You know, and so, you know, we navigated that together. And so, you know, it's those things that come into our lives. And how will we meet it? How will we meet each other? With curiosity, with a sense of we're in this together. We're worshiping together in spirit and truth, even though how you put clothes on spirit and truth and how I put clothes on spirit and truth is going to be a little bit different. Who cares? We're all here on the path, evolving humanity together, contributing to the becomingness of what we have come here to be, to remember the divine source that we are and from which we have come. It's not just the people around us in our lives that are alive, but it's also those on the other side that are here evolving with us, helping us along, I believe. And this week of all weeks, you know, they say when the thin veil is happening with Halloween and All Saints Day and all Dia de los Muertos and all these things that have kind of converge at this time of year, they say this Celtics and others say that the veil is thin between the living and those who have gone before. Of course, any time can be a time to invite people from the other side to help us, to be a part of our lives, for us to continue to know each other, to be in conscious relationship with one another. Chaos came to me in my dreams a couple times. One time he was standing at the entryway of our labyrinth, and he turned and he looked at me, but he didn't just look at me, he looked into me. You know that look. And then he just turned and moved toward the entryway of the labyrinth, and it felt to me as if it was like, I'm going on this mystical, magical journey of faith. The journey of faith continues, and we're still connected. I'm still going to teach you from the other side. Might have been what he was really saying. But for you, your beloved ones, to know that you have even more than this room full of community or the people in your life, your family, your friends, whatever it may be, that there is accessible to you so much. And, you know, one of the things that Krista Tippett talks about is as we evolve beyond the social norms like Jesus was showing us. We step out of those boundaries of limitation, like, for example, the detached nuclear family idea, that this is my family, right? The, you know, 2.2 children and the cat or dog and the mom and dad, right? And that's it. This is my support system. And of course, all of us, many of us on our journey have learned, whether that has been a good experience for us or not, we know that there is limitation to it, maybe even loneliness in that box. And so our society is evolving in such a way that we step through that line and we make family, right? We make community. We create relationship. Shane Claiborne is a young man who started the Simple Way with a bunch of his friends. They started out protesting at Occupy Wall Street, and then they realized they didn't want to work at what they were against. They wanted to work what they were for in the tradition of Mother Teresa. And he said, you know, I wonder if we could go work with Mother Teresa. And his friend said, well, I don't know, maybe we could call. And so he calls, and nobody returns his call. And he calls again, and he says, I'm looking for the sisters of, I can't remember the name of it, but Mercy, no, it's not Mercy, I don't think. But anyway, the convent and the service projects that Mother Teresa oversaw. And so he calls, and he said, this raspy voice answers. And he says, I'm looking for the, you know, blah, blah, and Mother Teresa. And she says, this is she. Mother Teresa? He said, can I come help you? She said, sure, come on. And these kids worked in a leper colony in India. And he got to see what it's like for intentional community to happen for people that were forced into intentional community and how they created this beautiful community. And he and his friends came back to Philadelphia and created their own intentional community where they serve homeless people and kids who need help with homework, and they walk their faith together. It's a beautiful thing. He tells amazing stories. And I'll just tell you one in the interest of time. But he said that there was this married couple who wanted to have children, and they couldn't. And they met this 16-year-old homeless girl in the neighborhood who was 6 months pregnant. And they said, just, you know, come home and with us for a little while, and we'll see if we can help you figure it out. And so she had the child while she lived there. And Shane hadn't seen the couple. He had been acquainted with for about 10 years, and he comes back to visit. And the formerly homeless girl is now a nurse. Her daughter's a teenager. And the woman from the married couple has developed multiple sclerosis, but she has a nurse living with her who is committed to taking care of her until she dies. That's the amazing fabric of the human heart at work. It's the power of us saying yes to God, to faith, to spirit and truth, to the propelling innate divinity in us that is always knocking from the inside of our hearts to get out. Let me out. Open the doors, open the windows, stop shutting down. And let me be in the world, making connection and evolving through you, through your relationships, through your actions, by you going over and over back to the source and dancing with the mystery. That's what we're about. So let's know that as we say yes to the evolution of our own faith, we are in a big way contributing to the evolution of humanity. Let's say it together. As I evolve my faith, I contribute to humanity's evolution. And so it is.